My Mac Podcast 122, and the Apple TV is out. Yeah, baby.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
And it is time that I gotta dig through my couch, find any spare change, and get my butt to the Apple store because I want an Apple TV. I'm sorry, I have to have one.
Yeah, I just had a little quick review of it in the latest Popular Science, as a matter of fact.
Did they
talk about that, the Digio and the, what was the other one, Sony? One that they had coming out, or...
I don't know. Well, I'm Tim Robertson. I'm here with Chad Perry in the studio, and joining us via Skype is Guy Searle.
Sorry.
Inside joke.
Yeah.
Although I think between the three of us, I'm the only one with an HD TV that could actually use the Apple TV, correct?
Correct.
So you can't use it unless you have an HD TV? So
that's right.
I thought it was component video out as well.
Yeah, but you have to have a widescreen. That is a requirement. Ooh. You have to have a widescreen HD TV or at least a digital TV.
Okay. Well, so, that definitely leaves me out then.
But do you think that's a good idea for Apple to completely ignore 99.9% of all televisions out there? Or do you think it's probably a good forward-thinking solution?
I think it's probably a good forward-thinking solution. You know, I mean...
Yeah, it's...
Go ahead.
I guess I look at it as like when they abandoned the 3.5-inch floppy disk. Everybody said, oh my God, no one's going to like that because everybody uses 3.5-inch floppies. Well...
Yeah, 6 months later, everybody said, eh.
Yeah, I like CDs.
I really haven't heard too many people say, oh my God, it doesn't support my old TV.
Right.
I mean, I would think that...
My Magnavox console.
Yeah, exactly.
No, because for most of the geeks, they're going, oh my God, honey, we have to go out and get a new TV. Isn't that terrible?
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, crap.
No, actually, what I've been hearing most is complaints that it's only 720p.
Yeah, but, you know... It's very few people on the planet can tell a true difference between a 720p and a 1080i.
Well, you'd think every single geek could from all the complaining that you hear.
Now, is it only 720p or does it do 1080i as well? My understanding was that it did 1080i, but maybe I'm mistaken.
Give me just a second and I will find out.
We're going to go check the website.
Let's all go to the website.
And have ourselves a beer.
Geekgasm.
Video formats supported. H.264 and protected H.264.
No, that's just the supported. I mean, that's what it will play. Anything that iTunes will play, you can watch over Apple TV. What I want to know is the requirements for the television and what it outputs as. Does it output as 1080i, 420p, 720p... That's really the question.
I am here right at the Apple site, and...
Is it not saying?
It's unless I'm missing something, it's not saying.
It's not saying. All it's saying is that it connects to your TV via an HDMI port for component video and audio ports.
Is there a specification page?
We are looking.
We are looking. This makes great audio, doesn't it?
Yeah,
everyone's
sure does.
Just kind of browsing the internet and... I'm looking back and forth between the screen and Chad and the screen.
No, and frankly, I'm not seeing where they have the specs listed at. Guy, you having any luck with that? Oh, there it is. Tech specs. Got it.
Here we go. What you need, widescreen TV, Mac or PC, iTunes 7.1. Compatible TVs. Apple TV works with widescreen enhanced definition or high definition TVs capable of 1080i, 720p, 576p, or 480p resolutions.
Yep.
Including popular models from these manufacturers and blah, 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 blah. They don't advertise with us.
So it is 1080i, so I am completely in the clear of getting one now. My problem is I don't have an HDMI plug or a DVI plug in my HDTV. I've got, like, the second generation of HDTVs.
So it's a CRT. You've got component video, don't you?
But I do have component video, but here's the problem. I've got five plugs that I have to go into for component. I have the Nintendo Wii, because I'm upscaling it to 480p.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've got the PlayStation 3, the Xbox 360, my upscaling DVD player, which is actually unhooked right now. It's not even connected, as well as the Comcast cable box.
Wow, it just sucks to be you, doesn't it, Tim?
That's five things, and I've only got two inputs on my stereo, and then from the stereo it goes to the television. So right now I have one of the inputs is simply the Comcast box that goes directly to video two. Well, no, I could put that on a switcher. But then the three game consoles all run through a component switcher. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I could select what I do is say I'm going to play the PlayStation 3. I turn on the PlayStation 3, I go to the switcher, and I select
1, 2, 3.
It says,
right.
Yeah, 1, 2, or 3. And then I go to the stereo, and I put that on video 3. And then, boom, I'm on, you know, 1080i.
It's as simple as that.
On the television. But how do I add another component? I've looked and looked, and the only things that I could find that's component over 4 is 6, and they get extremely expensive. And I'm... You wouldn't think so, but I'm kind of a cheapskate.
Might be time to get a hold of those people over at JVC that we saw at Macworld.
So, no, that was NEC, I believe.
Oh, you're right. It was NEC.
NEC. So Apple TV is out. I want one. How do you guys think this thing's going to sell?
I do.
Ooh, do you?
Oh, yeah. Mm.
Well, how do you think they should market this thing? I personally think they really need to go with iPod for your television. That's how they should market it.
Well, so far the marketing campaign has been pretty stealthy because I haven't seen a whole lot.
There's not a commercial out yet.
It's hard to say because really it's all based on what you're going to do with iTunes. You know, whatever you have in iTunes, you're going to play through and get picked up by this thing.
Yeah, but this thing is basically, it is an iPod for your television. It has a small hard drive in it, it syncs with iTunes, and just like the iPod, you can put pictures on it, you can put podcasts, you can put music, you can put videos. The iTV is basically an iPod with only a 40 gig hard drive.
Well, yeah, but have they said what you can use the hard drive for? Because wasn't there a question on that?
No.
Storing content locally.
It stores content locally. It syncs with it. You could still stream video over your wireless connection or wired connection.
But it'd be faster.
But the hard drive is basically for, you could tell it, say, only copy the television shows that I bought on iTunes that I have not watched yet. So when you fire it up, boom, it's right there. There's no streaming. It's coming directly from the ITV. So there's no buffering or any of that crap that would really tick me off. And it's going to look halfway decent. But here's the other thing that the Apple TV is doing. 720p and 1080i, true high definition. You can't get any video in the iTunes Music Store
that's above 720.
No, that no. Are you kidding? It's not even 480. No, it's not even 480p. Not really. It's almost DVD quality is how they market it. It's almost DVD quality. Well, yeah, DVD quality is pretty good, but not on a 720. Not compared to 720.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
well, can't you use
certainly
iTunes?
Certainly not for buying and watching a movie. Maybe a TV show you could get away with that, but
yeah.
Well, can't you use iTunes or QuickTime Pro to convert your existing stuff into something that's a little higher quality?
That's like saying, can I take a graphic and make it look better? I mean, if you start with crap, it's crap. There's not really too much you can do. You might be able to pretend like an upscaling DVD player will take a 480. Signal and upscale it to 1080i. It will look better, but you're really not enhancing the image a whole lot.
That's true.
So, I don't know. I think this is predicting that Apple is going to have high definition content in the very, very, very near future on iTunes. Why else would you have it supporting 720p when you don't provide content in that format?
That's going to raise up the file size quite a bit.
Well, unless I don't even think that's an issue anymore.
Well, unless they've got some other type of new compression scheme that they're getting ready to release as well. That will only work like Apple TV.
I think if someone really wants to download a high-definition video, they know that these are going to be large files. And I think that's just a given. It's going to be, you know, 3 to 4 gigs, and it's going to take hours to download. That's fine. I'm going to click buy it now and, you know, watch it later. So... Anyways, that's the ITV or Apple TV, $3.99. Apple's online store has free shipping right now, so might want to, if you really want one, you can't beat free shipping.
Nope.
So check it out. I heard Best Buy has like a 2-week exclusive on selling it.
Really?
So other than Apple and Apple Retail, the only other place you can get it for at least a couple weeks is Best Buy.
Wow.
I might go out there tomorrow and just to take a look and see if they've actually got one.
See if they got
one. Although I'll probably, yeah, and I might leave my wallet at home because if I see one, you know me.
Don't get pulled over by the police on the way then.
Drool. I must buy. I have no willpower.
And reaching back for a wallet. Stop.
One of the new things that we're going to start doing with the podcast is you're not going to have to just download it to iTunes or your desktop to listen to it. We're going to embed a Flash player up at mymac.com. So every new podcast that we release is going to have a little embedded Flash player. So anybody that visits mymac.com, it's very clear that there's an audio or a video file, boom, right there on the main page that you can listen to.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a test up there right now. I posted it on March 22nd. It's called Flash Player for My Mac Podcast Test. And that's actually linking to our 100th podcast. So it's a little bit older content, but that's okay. Not everybody's heard that show.
Right.
And it's personally my favorite show.
It's for a test anyway, so.
It's for a test. And I'm going to leave it up there, though. But here is what I want to put out to our listeners. There's a lot of really talented people that listen to this show. Mm-hmm. Right now I'm using the Audio Player, and it's just a Flash player with the Audio skin like over the top of it, so it says Audio. Well, and Audio is a nice company and all. I like them, but I'd really rather have one that's mymac.com. So when you see it, it's you know where it's from. It's from mymac.com. So if anybody out there knows how to embed a Flash player at mymac.com that will have our own custom graphics or at least logo, please get a hold of me and
can you reskin another player?
Well, that's what I'm looking into. I'm sure I can, but you know, in the last day and a half that I've been working on this project, I haven't come across on how to do that yet. At least not easily. So, you know, I put it out there for the... I might end up doing it myself. I don't know. But I'm also in the process of completely redesigning mymac.com. It's going to look a lot different in the very near future.
Yeah, you sent us the logo. It looks
pretty
good.
Got a new logo. It's an it's a logo from 15 years ago from another publication that ceased to exist back in 97. I talked to the ex-publisher of that site. I was willing to buy the logo from him. This is the logo that I've always wanted. And he gave it to us. So I'm very, very happy. Donnie Yankelo said he's going to rejigger it, make it look a little bit better, because the only version that we have, and the only one that exists that we think right now, is a very small 72 DPI crappy blurry JPEG.
Right.
So Donnie's going to turn it into, I don't know if he's going to redraw it or how he's going to do it, but I completely trust Donnie will make it look awesome. And he's going to turn it into Illustrator line art, so I can make it as big and small as I want, and then I can export it in any format I want. So we will have a new logo. We're going to have the whole top of the site is going to look completely different. And I'm looking forward to it. It's a lot of work, don't get me wrong. We do have the ebook thing launching. Donnie's ebook is done, ready to go. I just haven't gotten around to creating the ebook subpages yet. And the reason is I don't want to launch that until the site is redesigned as well, so we can. I don't have to double my work.
Use that to kick the site off.
Exactly, and for promotional reasons, I want the new site up and ready and done. So when I do roll out promotions for the ebooks, we can use the new logo for that, and you know, it'll just look a lot better. So those are two big projects that we've got going on at mymac.com. Another one is the new content that we've got posted up there right now. Donnie Ankelo, speaking of Donnie, he reviewed the Easy Gear Etzel and the Easy View from Easy Gear. It's iPod accessories. And he also did the iPod Video Aluminum hard case review, which is kind of neat. It's from Rhino Skin. And Guy, you remember, we stopped at the Rhino Skin booth. We actually got them on video. They got some really nice looking stuff.
Yes, they do.
And you know, you remember those little iPod shuffle cases that we looked at the expo?
Yeah.
The little, they're kind of metal, and they just slide right over the second generation shuffle.
Yeah, they were real sharp.
I bought a 4-pack of them, $20, at a local store here. It was actually at a store that I wasn't expecting to have any kind of iPod gear. Isn't it amazing where you're finding iPod gear now?
Yeah, I know.
It's everywhere.
It's at gas stations. I've been in a gas station, and they've got little rubber iPod cases, and I'm like, what? Why? Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you selling those? Really?
Really? iPod cases? You know, it's crazy. It really is. I've seen iPod accessories being given away at banks now.
Yeah, like for promotional.
Free checking and, you know.
Get a new case for your iPod.
Yeah. Oh, no, I've actually seen, Nano. I saw the first generation iPod shuffles being given away at a bank once. We saw it at a, or no, we saw it in a store, didn't we? Remember, you saw that ad.
Right.
So, yeah. So, Donnie's doing the iPod review accessory stuff up there.
I predict in about 6 months, your local supermarket will give you a Zune for every dozen eggs that you buy.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. Owen Rubin reviewed the BBP Hamptons collection computer cases. It is a good-looking case. He's got a lot of pictures in that article. If I needed a new case, I would definitely look at that. And if not that one, speaking of computer cases, John Nemo. It's weird. The same week we have two reviews of two different portable storage solutions for your iBook, MacBook, PowerBook, MacBook Pro. And, of course, Donnie's Maxpiration 77, when iPhoto edit tools are not enough. So that's some new, and there'll actually be some more content by the time we post this show, because we record on Thursdays, and I haven't posted Friday stuff. One of the things that I didn't get a chance to talk about that was posted before we actually recorded, or after we recorded the last podcast, was my Office OS 8 is coming, should you really care? Office 08. A lot of people say, I thought it was going to be Office 07. Well, the Mac version is Office 8, 08, as in 2008, whereas the PC version is Office 07.
So ours is better, and obviously.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope so.
But that's what I kind of put to that. Check it out at mymac.com. Good discussions going on after that.
Right.
And, of course, we've got our own David Cohen here on the podcast that's going to be talking about exactly that subject. On this podcast, he's talking about Visual Basic in Office 07 and the lack thereof in Office 08. Mm. And that was one of my concerns that I didn't really talk too much about in my article. I kind of held that back, that the new Office version for the Mac is not going to have Visual Basic. And I think that's going to completely screw up a lot of things. Neil Tichton, the publisher at MacTech, he actually sent me an email after he read it, and he says, you know, we're doing this whole series on replacing Visual Basic with Apple scripting. And I said, that's great, and I'm sure that's going to help a whole lot of people, but that's not going to help people in a cross-platform environment.
That's right.
Yeah, no doubt.
If you're in an office and that's what you guys are using for scripting and everything, and all the PC users are using Visual Basic, that's not going to help the Mac users on Office 8. And it works the other way. If you create some really great Apple scripts, that's not going to help the PC Word users.
Right.
So I think that, really, I think that Microsoft is screwing the pooch here. But definitely keep listening to the show, and David's going to get more into that. He's much more learned on the subject than I am. Robert Hazarig is going to review the InMotion IM7 from Altec Lansing. I've heard that's a really good sound system for your iPod. So give it a listen, and we'll figure out what Robert says. And see, I'm saying this, but neither Guy nor Chad have heard any of this content
yet.
That's
right, so we have.
No.
So we're being real quiet.
You know what's cool is John Nemo, this is a new one for him, he talks with a mystery guest, and he just calls him Mr. X. And they go into a lot of subjects, and it's a longer interview than John usually does, and it's fascinating. It's a really, really good interview, so I think you guys will enjoy it. I know I enjoyed it. I didn't listen to it all the way through. I kind of skipped through a little bit, but because I was preparing to record the show.
Is Mr. X like Racer X from the old
Speed? Yes, he is.
And he's actually Nemo's brother?
No.
Who died in a horrible flame.
But he does does have a monkey, so.
Chim-chim.
So by the time this goes live, Guy will have already recorded. Are you going to actually record a podcast, Guy?
I'm going to try. I received an email from Pat just before we started to record.
Let's back up a little bit and tell everyone what you have had done by the time this show goes live, but in real time it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, it's going to happen on Saturday the 24th, not that it'll be too late by the time anybody hears this.
Yeah, anybody hears this, so go back in time and you can go.
The Washington Apple Pie User Group, their March 24th general meeting, I was invited about a month and a half ago to be the featured speaker, and I'll be talking about podcasting and basically, you know, what it was like to write for the Washington Apple Pie Journal and how that led into my current gig with MyMac.com and just things along those lines.
They've completely run out of good ideas for their meetings, and they're scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Naturally. Well, like, for example, it was about a month and a half ago in conjunction with the Virginia Mac Users Group, they had Walt Mossberg. So I get to follow Walt Mossberg.
Yeah, that's going to be a hard act to follow. He's a pretty brilliant guy.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Anyhow, what's the stat and latest on Russ Walkowicz joining you there? Any word on that?
No, I have not heard from Russ. I sent him an email asking, you know, if he was going to be there, and haven't heard back. I'm hoping he's going to be there just for moral support, if not anything else. I've got a couple of blogs on the
You know what? I got his phone number right here. Let's You want to call him right now? We can call him while we're on the show.
All right.
Nothing like
putting
an ambush.
Him on the spot.
That's right. He's got actually two phone numbers. One used to be his modem number.
Mm.
I don't know. This is going through my cell phone.
I don't think he has a modem anymore. We talked about that when he was on the podcast.
I don't know how this is going to pick up.
Hope he's home.
This little crappy cell phone that
I'm
holding.
I can hear it pretty well.
Hello, Tim.
Hello, Russ. How are you?
I'm ducky.
Okay. I'm recording the podcast right now.
You're live.
Oh.
You're live on this crappy little speakerphone. I've got Guy here, and he's got an important question, and that is, are you going to be going to the meeting this Saturday with him at the Apple Pie?
I am sure going to try.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
I have everything lined up.
Very good.
Okay, cool. Well, that's all we wanted. We wanted to put you on the spot live on the show.
That's okay. I'm glad I answered nicely.
So are we.
What the hell do you want, Tim? I'm taking a crap. Talk to you later, Russ.
Bye, Russ.
Have a good
thanks.
One, guys.
So that was Russ Walkowicz on the tiny speaker.
Oh, that was fun. Who else can we
ambush? That was fun. Yeah, let's. I could call David Avery.
Ooh.
And he'll answer, "Hi, Timmy." He's about one of the only people. I hate Timmy. I always have.
Timmy!
Actually, he'll probably still be working.
That's right. He's on the West Coast, isn't he?
Yeah, he's in the San Francisco area. And this is Ambush Radio. Two ring-a-dingies. Uh-oh. He's actually working. He might not be able to answer. Well, he works for a large graphic company that starts with an A now. And
Anal Graphics?
Hello? I'm out. I can't hear you. I'll give you a call later.
Okay.
Oh, that was important.
Well, he answered. He's actually out, and he'll call me later.
And he can't hear anything.
No. Yeah, oh well, we ambushed him though. Wow, we're so devious.
Evil.
So that's what we got coming up later in the show. We got a Nemo with Mr. X, and I think you guys will enjoy that. I just stepped on Chad's dog a little bit, but it's a
he didn't yelp
stout
me.
Beast.
He's
I think
okay.
It's okay.
Okay, last thing before we kick out.
Yeah.
The Barack Obama Apple ad.
Haven't seen it.
The what?
You have not seen it?
Oh, the Hillary Clinton thing?
Yeah.
Well, some of his aides did it, though, right? I mean,
nobody's going to admit who did it.
Right.
What is this?
He did a pretty darn good job because
okay.
Watch.
You know the 1984 commercial where the woman's going through and the Big Brother voice is talking. She throws a hammer at the screen, smashes it, and all the lemmings are like, duh.
Yeah.
Right? Go ahead, Chad.
Well, in this version, they've got Hillary Clinton's face on the big screen talking about what's going on and her plans for 2008.
Oh,
and, of course,
no.
The woman is running with the big hammer. And she's actually got an iPod on. They had digitally put in an iPod and earbuds.
Yeah.
So she swings the hammer. She breaks it. Everything goes wild. You know, all the lemmings are going, oh, my God. And then, of course, there comes up a logo. It's a round O with the rain, the old rainbow colors from the Apple in there, and it says BarackObama.com.
it's pretty clever, really. When you know how, like in the old one, you'd hear, and you'd hear that big brother voice kind of. Well, it still does that, but it's Hillary. You can hear a Hillary Clinton speech going on. It's great.
Oh, it's brilliant.
I think
it's well
so
done.
Funny. It's too bad that the Democrats are focusing on destroying each other so much right now. And
Yeah.
Well, so far, I haven't been too thrilled about either candidate, so.
Yeah. Well, let's get off that because we have an international crowd, and they don't really care about American politics insofar as, you know, what it has to do with Apple. And
right.
So, anyways, that's our segment for this week. Again, listen to what's coming up later. We'll be back in 1 week. We might have an extra podcast if Guy's able to record one at the Apple meeting. And if not, we'll see everybody next week. Hey, and let me know if anybody out there is good with Flash. And, of course, we're always looking to play some feedback here on the show. And if you want to do that,
you can give us a call at our Skype number. It's 801-938-5559. Leave us a message.
Of course, you can do that from any telephone. You don't have to have Skype.
Yep.
Just call it up. Leave us a comment what you think. What do you think about the Apple TV? Are you going to buy one? Mm-hmm. And we'd love to hear from you. So for Tim, Chad, and Guy, I said for Tim, Chad, and Guy.
You can't speak for yourself.
Yes, I can speak for myself.
Alien Tim.
We are out.
Hello, my name is David Cohen and I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, my guide to using a Mac in a Windows world. Welcome to Fenestration 27. Regular listeners will recall that a few weeks ago I discussed some of the changes that were coming along in Office 2008 for Macintosh. One of the principal problems with Office 2008 is that it will be withdrawing support for Visual Basic for Applications. This is the macro language that is built into Office, and it really acts as a halfway house between a simple macro recorder that copies actions that you do manually with a keyboard and mouse, and a full programming studio environment such as C+ or C#, which would be something where you create a complete application from scratch. Now, Microsoft has said that they're going to replace support for Visual Basic for Applications in Office 2008 with AppleScript. Now, AppleScript is a fine environment for programming things on a Mac, and it's arguably a better solution than Visual Basic for Applications. AppleScript has been designed from the ground up to work with OS X, and it integrates with all of the applications within the Macintosh environment, not just with Office. The issue arises, of course, with cross-compatibility with Windows users. Windows will still have Visual Basic for Applications in the current version of Office 2007. And, of course, the older versions also support Visual Basic for Applications as well. The issue is, if somebody sends you a file with a Visual Basic for Applications macro or code in it, and you open it in Office 2008 for Macintosh, at the present time we don't really know exactly what will happen. There is a risk that you might actually lose that macro code when you save the file back again. Even if Microsoft deals with that and actually makes sure that doesn't happen, you won't be able to gain the functionality of the code within the file while you're in the Macintosh environment. Now, there is an outline chance that Microsoft will deal with this by providing an automated converter that can take code written in Visual Basic for Applications and convert it on the fly to AppleScript. However, this is deemed to be quite unlikely, as technically that would be a very difficult thing to do. At this point, we just don't know, and we're going to have to wait until later on the year for more details from Microsoft on Office 2008 for Macintosh before we really understand the true scope of this problem. However, as you might expect, the Macintosh community is anticipating the need to deal with this particular problem by providing more appropriate resources for Macintosh users now. A good example is MacTech Magazine, which in April will be publishing a 150-page guide within the magazine called Moving from Microsoft VBA to AppleScript, MacTech's Guide to Making the Transition. The aim of this guide is to actually provide a full resource guide for anybody who wants to develop applications using AppleScript for Microsoft Office. The aim of the guide is to give experienced VBA developers, and even users who've never considered using automating functions within Microsoft Office, the opportunity to learn how to do this simply and easily with AppleScript. Now, I've done a fair bit of Visual Basic programming in my time, and it's actually quite a nice environment to create applications or your solutions in, but you do have to get your head around it, and it's very, very different from AppleScript, which is a really readable and easy-to-understand language. I expect in the grand scheme of things it will be a fair bit easier to develop automation functions and applications within Office for Mac using AppleScript rather than relying on Visual Basic for applications. It's just a shame that we have to lose the cross-compatibility with Windows at the same time in order to get that increased functionality. I suspect guides such as the MacTech volume will be very useful in order for the users who want to make this transition. One of the other beauties of using AppleScript, of course, is that you can take AppleScript and turn it into automator workflows, which means that even non-programming users can use them. Again, it remains to be seen exactly how Microsoft chooses to support AppleScript within Office for Macintosh 2008, so we'll have to see whether they actually take the opportunity to provide automator workflows or tools that allow you to take Office macros written in the new AppleScript language and convert them to automator workflows. However, if you do use VBA in the current version of Office for Macintosh, and you want to understand what the brave new world of AppleScript is going to be like within Office, I recommend you head out to your local newsstand and pick up the April issue of MacTech magazine. That's going to do it for this session. As always, questions or comments to davidcohen@mymac.com. Until the next time.
Hello, I'm Robert Hazelrig, and today I'd like to talk to you about Altec Lansing's InMotion portable audio system, better known as the IM7. If you are an audiophile, which I fancy myself one, you're familiar with great names such as Yamaha, Nakamichi, Marantz, Harman Kardon, and Altec Lansing. Altec Lansing is infamous for their high-quality speaker systems. And the IM7 is not an exception. The IM7 is a portable boombox that will take 8 D-size batteries if you want to take it to the beach. It also has a power cord adapter in case you're using it inside. And it has a wireless remote control. So if you want to skip songs or navigate the iPod from across the room, you can do so. If you are traveling abroad, it also comes with European plug adapters. But more importantly, it will work with any iPod that you have. It comes with a variety of sleeves, so you can fit any iPod in there, excluding the Shuffle line. And if you have a second generation Nano, you can also go to the Altec Lansing website and order a free adapter right there. The first thing you'll notice when you see this device is its unusual round shape. It's about 15 inches wide, and it stands about 7 or 8 inches tall. But its cylindrical shape allows for its interior, or its center, to be a tremendous bass woofer. The sound quality I got from the IM7 was very good, even at extreme levels of volume. That's extreme highs and extreme lows. In my daily use with the IM7, I didn't experience any distortion. And I would say that the IM7 certainly gives the Apple Hi-Fi a run for the money at $100 cost savings. That's right, the IM7 only retails for $249. But wait, I'm skipping ahead. I forgot to tell you about my favorite part of the IM7, and that is it has two jacks in the back, one for composite video and the other for S video. Now, to me, this is a pretty cool feature because, one, I don't have a high definition television at home, so I don't plan on buying Apple TV anytime soon. So the Altec Lansing IM7 also doubles as a great way for you to watch content from your video iPod on your television. And it works great. In fact, the only downside I really had to the IM7 was the bass and treble controls. The thing I didn't like about the bass and treble controls is, one, there are no buttons to control the treble and bass on the unit itself. The only way you can adjust the treble and bass is via the remote. The other thing I didn't like about the treble and bass controls was the fact that I was never sure, other than with my own two ears, hearing whether or not the bass was turned all the way up or not. In other words, there was no way I could tell if the bass was, or the treble, was in the center pin position, or if they were all the way up or all the way down. This, for the most part, is not a big problem, because you know what? If the music sounds good, who cares if it's all the way up or all the way down or in the middle? So just adjust it to your liking and you will be fine. So my Mac rating for the InMotion IM7, I'm giving it a very, very high 4.75 out of 5 stars. This has been Robert Hazelrig. Thank you for listening.
We're doing something a little bit differently this week on Book Bites Live here at the MyMac.com podcast. We have a mystery guest who we will call Mr. X, and he's here with me live in the MyMac.com podcast Book Bites Live studio. Welcome, Mr. X.
Thank you, John.
And I've learned from working with Mr. X that he is a professional computer consultant and tutor, and so we're going to keep his identity secret because we don't want to jeopardize his professional standing. Because some of the things we're going to be asking him are slightly under the radar, and we want to be able to learn from the voice of experience. When you're working with a client, Mr. X, whether it's a commercial client or a private client, and you don't have access to the software or the manual that you're working on, what's the first thing you do to get that information?
Well, the first place to go is always the online help facility. Now, I work in both Mac and in Windows, and in general, I would say that Windows is better on average in having a good help facility. The Mac help is spotty. Some applications have good stuff and some don't. After that, I'd say you go online to the resources that the company has, and then to any forums that they have, and then beyond that to the internet in general.
I mean, like a Google search or something.
Google search, yeah. But the first, a better place to go would be the Mac OS X hints, or if you're working with an Adobe product, you go to the Adobe forums. That's a good place to go too.
People don't know how to even find those places. Do they do a Google search to find out where those resources are?
Well, typically, if you put your question in, like, you know, why does InDesign crash when I do this? oftentimes, it'll lead you to the forums.
Okay, so once we've exhausted all the regular channels, what happens if you need to dig a little deeper?
Well, that's about as deep as it goes. The best stuff is going on in forums. What I like about forums is that they're not just the official party line of the company. So people are talking about the real bugs that the product has. Also, there's a lot of really interesting hints in there. For example, one time I wanted to find out, I wanted to develop a keystroke for Microsoft Word where it automatically pasted plain text as opposed to whatever other choice there was.
Okay.
And that was, I found that in a forum. Somebody just had the instructions for how to do that. So there's a lot of good stuff in the various forums.
But what happens if you need to learn software for a client, whether it's a commercial or an individual client, and you don't want to spend $500 or $600 for some commercial application? How do you actually get access to that information that only that software and that manual can provide for you?
Well, I think, you know, I represent a different kind of need than an end user would, because I've already learned how to use 500 pieces of software. The 501st one isn't that easy, isn't that difficult. But sometimes I need a kind of an orientation to it. And oftentimes just the online help. I need to understand they have something called, one recent one was Now Up to Date. I had to develop a group calendaring system for somebody, and wasn't really sure how to use the resources, you know, what categories referred to. Okay, so I needed kind of an orientation, and Now Up to Date has a really crummy manual, actually.
The program is called Now Up to Date.
Right.
All right.
And it's a group calendaring system. It's actually been around in the Mac for a long, long time. It's also available in Windows, but it's one of those programs where the Mac is actually a version ahead of Windows.
It's about time.
Yeah. It doesn't happen very often, but they originally developed for the Mac.
Oh.
The manual's bad. I just needed kind of like an orientation. What are the concepts of this program get me started. And I actually did call the company, and you know, in 5 minutes, they sort of gave me an overview of what was supposed to happen. Some manuals just aren't written very well, and it's hard to sort of get your bearings.
But is it a decent product?
Well, given what this particular client needs to do, yeah, I'd say it's you know, it's better than iCal for what they need.
Okay, back to your story.
Okay. So, I guess one rule is, I guess we were talking about this yesterday about how you have to develop a time limit. You know, for me, it's an hour and a half. If I haven't made any progress in an hour and a half, I need to try something different.
You're talking about when the meter's running for in a commercial situation.
Well, the way that I charge for people is if I'm learning, I'm not charging you.
Okay.
I think, you know, you're hiring me as an expert, and you're hiring somebody who should already know this stuff. So I guess my sort of thing is, if I'm doing something for the first time, I sort of mentally calibrate, like, what if I was doing it for the third time? How long would it take me on the third time through?
Sure.
And I sort of charge them for that amount of time. So if it took me 10 hours, but I think on the third time through 2 hours, then I charge them for 2 hours.
That's very fair.
Yeah.
Anyway, you called the company, you needed this information, then what?
Well, then they gave me the sort of the overall view, and then I was able to make sense of it, and then I ran into some other problems, and I went to some forums and found some more information about it. That's fairly common. You did a mail program, Mach 10 or something like that, something by Totera. And same thing was, you know, the answers were all in forums. The company's own resources were very, very slim.
I see.
And I think to do what you do, you have to be good at using your online resources. And this has been true for, you know, back even before the internet. I used to spend a lot of time on Novell's bulletin board system. Because, you know, Novell had a section of the bulletin board system that was just for Macs, and I would find out what other people were facing. I mean, it's very seldom that you're the first person that's experiencing a problem. You know,
sure.
1,000 people have done it before you, so why not benefit from their experience?
Now, what about in a situation where, whether it's for personal, commercial, or individual use, that you just want to see what the software is like? And it's like a $4 or $5 or $100 or $1,000 program. Are there situations where you need to circumvent the normal licensing and the normal key codes that these companies provide to keep people from stealing their software?
Yeah, there are times. You know, now that we have internet and we all have fast access, it is easier to do. But, you know, typically somebody would call me up and they'd say, "Hi, I'm a musician. I want to do some online composing, and I want to use Sibelius." And I go, "Okay, I can help you." So I have to now get a copy of Sibelius and at least learn, you know, the overview of it so that I can help them.
It's called Sibelius, like the name of the composer.
Like the composer.
Okay, great. We'll put a link to all of this software on our show notes so people can at least see what we're talking about.
So Sibelius, like a lot of other products, has a time demo. So you have 15 days or 30 days or 10, whatever they allow. And, you know, as long as you get the full use of the program, great. I don't have any problem with using the 30-day demo, to get familiar. And usually, you know, it doesn't take that long. My appointment's just 4 days away, so I've got to get familiar now.
But there is some software that only gives you a partial use of the program.
Right. Yeah. So you can't save a file or you can't print a file or you know, there's just stuff you can't do. And sometimes I do circumvent it. There is available on the internet, a lot of, ways to circumvent it. They fall into three categories. One is, there's serial numbers that are available. Then the second, is cracks. So in a crack, what you do is in Windows, for example, there might be a DLL file that holds the licensing information. So you install the software product as normal, and then you replace one or two files, so that the product thinks it's already been registered and activated.
Is there something comparable in Mac?
Yeah, same thing. I was just saying in Windows, it's often a DLL file.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But there'll be one or two files there'll be instructions, you know, just replace these two files. That's often for a specific build, though. So you have to make sure you have the right version to go with the one that you have. Then the other one is a what's called a key generator. So like in Adobe Creative Suite, for example, you have to have not only a serial number but also an activation code. So what you would do in that is you would say, I want to register over the telephone. You put in, first of all, it generates a serial number for you. Then you put that serial number in. The program gives you a number. Then you put that number in and get your activation code. So it's a way of just generating an infinite number of licenses.
And is it safe to say that your goal is not to deprive Adobe or any other company of profit?
Right. Yeah. No, I'm not advocating that at all. First of all, there's some people use Adobe Creative Suite for 1500 hours a year.
Yeah.
And then other people use it for 2 hours a year. And Adobe doesn't have any pricing for that. And, you know, in my situation, I need to do it to be able to support my customer. I don't really have any need for the software above and beyond that. But if they ask me why they're having a particular problem with fonts or something, I need to kind of simulate that in my office and then so I can figure out how I can troubleshoot that problem when I get there. So there's that. And then the other thing is oftentimes you use software and it may take you 60 days to find out that you don't like it.
Yeah, that's serious.
I tried, for example, Microsoft Small Business Accounting. And initially I liked it. I liked it for the first couple of weeks I used it. But by the time I got to 60 days, I hated it.
Yeah.
So I went back to QuickBooks.
Okay.
And how do you get your money back? You can't.
And there's people who hate QuickBooks.
Yeah, right, right. So, everyone's got their own preferences. And oftentimes, yeah, within the first couple hours, you know you don't want to use a product. And that's great. You just throw away the demo. But sometimes it takes a while.
Now, are we advocating software piracy or bootlegging? What's the punchline here?
I think, if you buy a car is a relatively big investment. You get to test drive it and you have to do your homework. You go online and you find out, for cars, for Edmunds.com, what other people think of it, how it doesn't crash test, all that stuff. There's resources like that available for software too, but also it's just a lot about personal taste. What Consumer Reports thinks of a frying pan may be different than what you want out of a frying pan.
Sure.
So you have to be able to test drive it. And then the other thing is that sometimes you just need it for a couple of hours, in your whole life. You just need it for a couple of hours in your whole life. So why should you pay $400 for those 2 hours? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. It would be great if you could, have it licensed so you could just say, okay, I'm willing to pay $7 an hour to use this program.
A hotel room that you rent by the minute.
Yeah, that would be great. But they don't, the companies don't really provide you a lot of flexibility. So I guess I always feel like a company's business model, and this is me rationalizing. I mean,
That's okay.
When a company's business model does not meet my needs, I feel okay, to a certain extent to circumvent their business model. Another example is technical books. I use the news groups quite heavily. There's a lot of good for information out there. It's very old school. News groups is something that was around before before the web was. So if you're an old timer like me, I first got on the internet in 1984, which is about 10 years before most other people did. And we didn't have a web back then. We had FTP, we had Telnet, there was something called Gopher, and there was Usenet. And so Usenet is still alive and strong. There's about 120,000 news groups now dealing with everything from Ducati motorcycles to nude sunbathing to anything you can think of, anime characters, Sailor Moon, whatever.
We get it.
Yeah, it's amazingly diverse, and there's a lot of activity in there.
And what about technical manuals?
And there's, I can't remember the exact name of it, but it's something like alt.binaries.ebook.technical. And they have in there, if you want to learn about Flash or about PHP programming or whatever you want, there are all the manuals in PDF form. Now, what I like about it is that sometimes I just need to know one thing.
You don't need to go to the bookstore or go to Amazon.com and order a $60 book just to read that one page.
Right.
Okay.
And I, you know, Amazon is also kind of covering this, or Google is, by indexing all the books. If you just need one page. And, you know, it's not fun to read a PDF version of a manual. I mean, you may find that you want to actually get the manual after reading it.
Well, I think what we've learned is that there are ways to use the internet legally and efficiently. There are ways, if you want to be devious or if you need it for your professional purposes, to do an end run around some of the restrictions. But most important is to do your homework. Isn't that more important than anything else?
Yeah, it's hugely important. I mean, if you're being paid to be a professional, you have to know more than the people who are hiring you, obviously.
Yes.
And you can't learn everything. I think everybody in the computer industry feels like we are constantly falling behind, and we are. But, you know, if you can just go do your homework and stay ahead of your customer, that's really all that you need to do.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Book Bites live podcast, a somewhat unusual topic this time. But thank you, Mr. X, and we hope to be able to make sure we're not looking at your picture on the front page of the New York Times for being arrested next week. But I don't think so. But I think our listeners and our readers will appreciate the wisdom that you bring to this conversation.
I guess I just want to say, if anyone would like to try using the newsgroups on the Mac, a wonderful product is Unison.
How do you spell that?
Unison.
And that's software?
That's software. It's a shareware product. It's $30 for the license. And it's very good at getting you started downloading stuff from the newsgroups. You also need another program called MacPar Deluxe.
MacPar Deluxe.
Right. And the reason is that in binaries on the newsgroup are shipped in many, many, many segments. And MacPar Deluxe will verify the segments and glue them back together for you.
Terrific. And again, we'll have those links on our show notes. Thank you, Mr. X, for joining us. This has definitely been a very interesting conversation.
Thank you, John.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.